Well, today we continue in our series on James and the Sermon on the Mount, side by side. Today talking about simple integrity. And it's interesting, as we've said on several occasions, sometimes it just seems like James has a copy of the Sermon on the Mount sitting in front of him, a transcript of Jesus' words, and he is now making a commentary on the sermon. And remember that James was written much earlier than the Sermon on the Mount's, the Sermon on the Mount was distributed. We think that Matthew began to be distributed among Christian people like in 70 A.D., but we find that James is writing his epistle in the 40s A.D. So before we had the Sermon on the Mount going all over the world, we had the epistle of James going all over the world. And it looks like James is actually making a commentary on Jesus' words. Today, simple integrity. In real life, 80% of millennials find it acceptable to lie when embarrassed. That's just how it is. Of course, we're going to lie rather than be in an awkward situation. On dating websites, about 10% of the dating profiles are fake, and 90% of Americans go on there and say, yeah, we know that what we're reading here is not all true, with even the 90% that are not all fake. When interviewing for a job, about 81% of people lie during their job interviews, to make themselves look a little bit better. And interestingly, even when talking to doctors, about 23% of people lie to their doctors about smoking, exercise, drinking, and sexual partners because, after all, you know, we'd be a little embarrassed to tell the doctor how things really are. When it comes to integrity, simple integrity, the idea in most cases is just that we would be what we seem to be. We project an image. People say, yeah, well, he seems like a good guy. If we were what we seem to be, most of us would probably be on a pretty good trajectory. Here's what it sounds like in the Sermon on the Mount. Again, you have heard that it has been said by them of old time, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Neither shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your word be yes, yes, or no, no, for whatever is more than these comes of evil. So you can just see Jesus saying, how about just simple integrity? We don't need elaborate oaths and swearings and promises. Just let your yes be yes, your no, no. Be a person of your word. James has evidently seen all of that, and his commentary on this says, but above all things, which is really interesting, right? Above all things. You know, just simple integrity. Above all things. Above all things, my brethren, do not swear, neither by heaven, neither by earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no, so that you may not fall into condemnation. So similar. And James just says, can we just not have simple integrity here? Just don't swear at all. Just be a person of integrity. Be a person of your word. Simple integrity. People of integrity have no need of swearing and oaths and that sort of thing because we hate the prospect of harming those who are relying on us. I don't want to hurt this person who's relying on me, so I am going to do what I said I was going to do. I just want to take care of this person. And secondly, you notice that people with humble dispositions are afraid of oaths because James 4:14 says, you don't know what will happen tomorrow. So you say, well, I promise you that tomorrow I am going to take you fishing. Well, what if I'm dead tomorrow? I mean, just be a person of your word and say, yes, I intend to make this work out. And I won't leave you hanging if you're relying on me. Swearing sounds like this to us, and most of the ways we think of this come from paganism. So this is not precisely what Jesus talks about in the Sermon on the Mount, but it'll give you the idea to swear something. Here's what we say. I swear in my mother's grave. The idea there is, may the reputation of my mother be tarnished forever if I'm not telling you the truth. Be tarnished forever, even in heaven and in eternity. Let them think badly of my mother if I'm not telling you the truth. I swear on my mother's grave. That's what we say. May God strike me dead if I'm lying. Or may lightning strike me dead if I'm lying. What we're saying is, I'm telling the truth, and God is watching, and may he strike me dead with lightning if I'm not telling the truth. See, that's an oath. May it happen. It's swearing. I promise I'm telling you the truth. We say, with God as my witness, this is the truth. An oath. With God as my witness, this is the truth. We say, I swear to God. I swear to God. We say, so help me, God. And the idea there is, as the Lord gives me the ability to speak these things, I will follow through on what I'm doing. So help me, God. So you're saying, you can't just trust me, but God will help me. Watch and see. And lately, since the 1980s, it's been common for people here in the U.S. to say, hand to God. You think, well, hand to God, you know, what is that all about? It's sort of like the courtroom thing. You know, you put your right hand on the Bible, hold up your left hand. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help you, God. Hand to God. This hand is gesturing to God. Like, God, look at me. We're waving at God over here. God, I'm gesturing to God. God will back me up on this. That's the idea. God will back me up on this. Well, Jewish people are never going to say God in any of their oaths. That's just not going to happen because they reverence the name God. You're not supposed to take God's name in vain. So you're not going to hear an observant Jew say, I swear to God, or with God as my witness. They're not going to use the word God. And that's why Jesus says the things that he says in the Jewish context of the Gospel of Matthew. So what a Jewish person is going to say is something like, I swear to heaven, or with heaven as my witness. See, they're not going to use the name God. With heaven as my witness, what I'm telling to you is true. Or they might say, with earth as my witness. Like, the whole earth is going to back me up on this. You know, I swear to the whole earth, everybody's going to back me up that this is a true story that I'm telling you. Or they might say, Jerusalem. All of Jerusalem will confirm this. You know, I swear by Jerusalem, by, we sometimes say, everything holy, that this is true. So I swear by Jerusalem. Or sometimes I swear by my own head. And you think, really, by your own head? And that was a thing that the Jewish rabbis did allow. I swear by my own head. And another way of saying that would be, I swear by my whole life, or I would stake my life on this. And all of these are oaths. I swear by this. We're looking for God's authority. Just as surely as God is watching this, it is going to come to pass. I'm telling you the truth. Well, the problem is, the rabbis in Jesus' day also had this entire sophisticated stratification for how you could get out of an oath. And you could say your oath in certain ways to dodge punishments if you don't follow through on it. And so it became a big mess. So, for example, swearing by God's name is binding, but if you swear by heaven and earth, it's not. So I swear upon everything that is holy in heaven and earth that this is the truth. Well, you can still get out of that one. That's okay, because you didn't actually use the word God. Swearing towards Jerusalem is binding. That is, if you turn toward Jerusalem, wherever Jerusalem is compared to where you're standing, you turn toward Jerusalem and you swear that a thing is true, then it's binding. But if you just say, I swear by Jerusalem, well, then it's not binding. You could get out of that and there's no punishment. Rabbi Eichaba, who's one of the most well-known rabbis, he said, well, a man might swear with his lips and annul it in his heart, so the oath is not binding. Well, swell. In other words, you're just lying. Well, in my heart, I didn't swear it. And so it was just a big mess, and Jesus had to address that. And he does that not in the Sermon on the Mount, but in Matthew chapter 23. Woe to you blind guides who say, whoever shall swear by the temple, it's nothing. But whoever shall swear by the gold of the temple, now you got to follow through on that one. Jesus says, you fools and blind, which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever shall swear by the altar, well, you can get out of that. That's nothing. But whoever swears by the gift that is upon the altar, well, now that's binding. He has to follow through. You fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Whoever therefore shall swear by the altar swears by it and by all the things on it. And whoever shall swear by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in the temple. And he that shall swear by heaven swears by the throne of God. and by him who sits on it. So you're giving your word, and God is watching you. And not only does this promise you're making matter to God, every idle word that men speak. Like, well, I didn't say it was a promise. Every idle word, just the ones that don't really matter so much, they'll give an account thereof on the day of judgment. Jesus is saying the whole thing has to be done with integrity. The whole thing has to be done with the knowledge that God is watching you. You have to be a person of your word. In Matthew 5:33, again, back at the Sermon on the Mount, remember what it says. You have heard, you shall not swear falsely, but I say, don't swear at all. Don't do any of it. Don't make any oaths. Don't swear. Don't do that. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. And anything more than that is just going to become evil. And James, just don't do it. Don't swear at all. And obviously, I think you've picked up with this introduction so far. We're not talking about swearing in the sense of, you know, saying bad words. Those tend to be curses. That's not particularly what we're talking about today, although there is a big relationship between the two, because there's a longstanding tradition both in Judaism and paganism where you would say, and if I'm not telling you the truth, may lightning strike me dead. Now that's a curse. So swearing and cursing do definitely have some overlap. But what we're talking about is making promises and oaths before God for his authority, and sometimes attaching a curse that if I'm lying, then may God strike me dead, that kind of thing. At any rate, James says, just don't use this kind of language at all. Just tell the truth. You said you're going to do it, do it. You said you're going to be there, be there. You said I could rely on you, so let me rely on you. Just be a person of your word. Philo, who lives at almost exactly the same time as Jesus and the Apostle Paul, you know, that vintage. Philo is a Jewish philosopher, not a Christian. And he says the mere fact of a person swearing casts suspicion on the trustworthiness of the man. The very fact that he has to swear that a thing is so proves that he probably isn't a person of his word. And Philo called these oaths, you know, I swear before heaven, he calls these oaths a second best voyage. In other words, since you're not a person of integrity and you can't be trusted, your second best option might be to fill your promise with oaths and swearing. And so if you're not a person of your word, you could try oaths and swearing. Of course, that's not great. And Philo says the very fact that he's resorted to oaths and swearing means that he can't be trusted. He also talked about the Essenes. These are the people who lived in the Qumran area, you know, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, and they acted a lot like John the Baptist. Some people say that maybe the Essenes had some sort of influence on John the Baptist. That may be true. And Philo was talking about how these people kept their word, and that was pretty impressive. He said about these Essenes, any word of theirs has more force than an oath. They avoid swearing, regarding it as worse than perjury. For they say that one who is not believed without an appeal to God stands condemned already. So in other words, when Jesus says, let's just not do this, he didn't stand alone. There were already some Jewish people who agreed, like, let's just not be swearing and doing oaths. Let's just be people of our word, people of integrity. All right, so we said people of integrity have no need of oaths because they hate the prospect of hurting people who are relying on them. And people with humble dispositions, people of integrity again, they know they might not even be alive tomorrow. So they're pretty careful about promising that they're going to do such and such a thing. We want to talk today about three different kinds of integrity, really the same integrity, but three different contexts of integrity. We want to talk about religious integrity and family integrity and marketplace integrity. And so we start with religious integrity. I mean, the problem is that everybody wants to lie. I mean, where do you find people of their word in the United States anymore and around the world? And especially this is abhorrent if it's taking place, if the lies, the deceptions are taking place in the Christian family. So here's an example of what we do not want to see come to pass in the Christian family. A.A. Allen, early television evangelist, he said, "I believe I can command God to perform a miracle for you financially." What a mess that kind of talk is. We have somebody who can command God. How awful. And of course, it turns out to be farcical anyway. He died in 1967. He's only 59 years old. And he died of liver failure from long-term alcoholism. So this is not a person of integrity that we're dealing with here. William Branham, he was a famous healing evangelist. He denied the doctrine of the Trinity. He falsely predicted that the world would end before 1977. He died in 1965 at the age of 56 years old after being able to heal himself from the injuries he received in a car accident. Now imagine that. This guy is a healer. He has access to all of the best healers in the United States, and he still can't heal himself. Well, why claim to be a healer if you can't even heal yourself? Hobart Freeman, megachurch pastor, also a healer. And yet, as he claimed to be a healer and forbade all of his church members in his megachurch from using traditional medicines, he himself had polio when he was a young man that caused him a lifetime limp, and he couldn't heal himself from that. He eventually got a laceration on his leg that eventually led to his death. He couldn't heal his leg. He couldn't keep himself from dying. And here he is, a full-time healer, and he dies at only 64 years old. If I were him, I would expect to die then 2 years from now. That's kind of young to be dying, particularly if you're a professional healer. Catherine Coleman, famous healer, and yet she was unable to cure her own heart disease, which she battled for 20 years, eventually took her life at only 68 years old. It's not that old. And she is a professional healer, they say, the best ever. Ruth Carter Stapleton, she's a faith healer and a best-selling author on that very subject. And yet, she wasn't able to heal her own pancreatic cancer. She died in 1983, and she is only 53 years old. That's not great for a professional healer, right? Oral Roberts is the most famous healer of all. He prophesied that he would build this wonderful hospital, which he did indeed build. And he said it was going to be magnificent, and God promised it. And yet, the hospital closed after only 8 years due to financial problems. He also said that the Lord had promised him that he was going to find a cure for cancer. He was going to find a cure for cancer. And yet, he died in 2009, and there's no cure for cancer. Well, he said the Lord promised it. You see the problem. The current premier spokesperson for the Signs and Wonders movement today at this moment is a fellow who states that it is always God's will to heal sick believers. It is always his will. That's his doctrine, and he's known for it. And yet, he has been unable to heal his own vision. He has to wear eyeglasses. And not only that, he had hernia surgery in 2009. He couldn't heal that. I mean, this is the premier spokesperson for the Signs and Wonders movement in the Western world. He was unable to heal his own son, which is very sad. His own son had deafness, 85 to 90% deaf in both ears. He has never been able to heal his own son. And, of course, the deafness causes a speech impediment. He couldn't heal that. He was unable to heal his father's cancer. His father died after a six-month bout with cancer, and he and all in his circle were praying for the health of his father, and father still died. Worst of all, he was unable to heal his wife's breast cancer. She suffered for 4 years. He couldn't heal her, and she died at the age of 67 just this past summer. I mean, what is going on here? There's a problem with our integrity if we say it's always God's will for believers to be healed, and then we're sick, and everybody we love is sick. What are we saying? We have to stop doing this. All of this big talk just shows a lack of Christian integrity. And if we can't be people of integrity, what's really left in the Christian faith? In recent days, we've heard about the Josh Duggar scandal, pedophilia. We've heard about Jerry and Becky Falwell scandal. Unbelievable. We've heard about the Ravi Zacharias scandal. Horrible. And Brian Houston scandal, the founder of the Hillsong denomination. I mean, where is the integrity? James says, above all things, can we just not do this? Let's just be people of integrity. We said a thing is so, it's so. Or we say it's not so, it's not so. Can we just not do that? People of integrity don't need oaths. They don't need swearing. They don't need promises. Because we don't want to hurt the people who are counting on us. If they're counting on us, we want them to know the things as they really are. And we also are afraid of making big promises because we don't even know if we're going to be alive tomorrow. Never mind able to fulfill any of these promises. So we really don't like a lot of oaths and swearings. We're afraid of them. Family integrity. What a mess we're in now, huh? Mike Singletary, do you know he was a great linebacker for the Chicago Bears and a truly Christian individual. And he recalls that when he was 12 years old, his dad, who was a minister, divorced his mom. And Mike didn't like that very much. When Mike is 12 years old, Dad says, what do you want for Christmas? He says, I want a record player. So Dad says, well, tell you what, go to Sears on such and such a day, and I'll meet you there, and I'll buy you the record player that you want. So Mike got up early. He took a bus to the Sears store. He got there just before it opened, and he waited around all day for his dad to show. Here's what it sounds like in Mike's biography. He said, I sat around waiting and waiting, but Dad never showed up. Late that afternoon, I rode the bus back home, crying all the way. He'd broken his promise. He lied. What was even worse, Dad later insisted that he'd been at Sears and that he'd gone all over the store looking for me. And then he called me an idiot for not being where I was supposed to have been. It was the worst, least Merry Christmas I can recall. I mean, what's happening with family integrity? We are abandoning the people who are relying on us. We're abandoning people who matter to us. And we just can't be people of integrity for some reason. And we are hurting our spouses, our children, the people in the world who are nearest to us, and it doesn't even seem to matter. James says, above all things, can we just not put this to bed that we're going to be people of integrity? Can we not? And Christians are having troubles with this. One adult woman is recalling her childhood, and her parents were divorced. And she was told that Dad hadn't been around for a couple months, but now Dad was going to come on Easter Sunday, take the girls to church, and then spend the whole day with them. So here's what it sounds like as she tells the story. But then the night before Easter, we were told that he was going to come and take us out to church and then spend the day with us. And we both got up extra early and we put on our newly purchased Easter dresses and we rushed through breakfast. And then we planted ourselves on top of our heating radiator that made a seat where we could look out our large picture window. And there we sat giggling and talking about how much fun we're going to have with Father. And there we sat all morning and through lunch and on into the evening before we finally gave up. He never showed up or even bothered to call. To this day, I still remember the hurt, the crushing disappointment I felt that Easter. I mean, families are a wreck. Even in the Christian community, families are all over the place, and there's just no integrity. There's no family integrity. And what do we think that's going to do with our children? They're going to be crushed, as she says. Some of you have been following this story, which is intensely sad. In June of 2017, Lisa Turkhurst, a well-known Christian leader in women's circles, she revealed that she would have to go ahead and pursue a divorce with her husband, Art, because of repeated infidelity and addiction. Well, they ended up going to counseling, and that didn't happen right away. As things pile on in the poor woman's life, after the June announcement, she made an October announcement that it turns out in the summer it was discovered she had breast cancer. And in November of the same year, 2017, she'd have to have a double mastectomy. Well, in December of 2018, because things had gone much differently in her relationship with Art, she and Art renewed their wedding vows. This was like, you know, a huge celebration. But then in January of this year, she announced that she has to divorce after all. It just wasn't working out. And there was more infidelity. So this is what she posted in January. She said, "I now believe the wisest and hardest choice I can make is to stop fighting to save my marriage of 29 years and instead accept reality." The divorce documents say that her husband, Art, who owns a Chick-fil-A restaurant, was on a website called Sugar Daddy and met a woman online and gave her $118,000 of family money trying to woo her. She says, "Over the past several years, I have fought really hard to not just save my marriage, but to survive the devastation of what consistent deception of one spouse does to the other. It's brutal and heart-crushing to constantly fear the hurtful choices of someone you love. I've had to learn the hard way that there's a big difference between mistakes, which we all make, and chosen patterns of behavior that dishonor God and the biblical covenant of marriage." You see the covenant, swearing, oaths, "I promise, with God as my witness," and none of it comes to good. "It's hard to face a future," she says, "that looks nothing like what I desperately and constantly prayed it would look like." How awful. I mean, where's the integrity, the family integrity? Where is that? Interestingly, you know, as things trickle down, they had adult children because they've been married for 29 years. In April of 2016, Lisa's daughter Ashley was married to a college pastor husband, which is nice. But in August of 2016, 4 months after her marriage, she learned about Dad's infidelity. She talked about that a year later in an article from August of 2017. And Ashley said when she heard that news about her dad, she said, "There's no way this is true. No, like, you don't understand. I know that's not true. My dad would never do that." She said, "My dad was my hero, my spiritual leader for 20 years until I got married. My best friend, my coach, my boss. I worked for him at his Chick-fil-A restaurant growing up. And the only man in my life that never broke my trust growing up. As you can imagine, I was completely heartbroken. But it also brought a lot of problems in my marriage." Imagine this. The father you trusted your life with for 20 years breaks your trust in the worst possible way. How the heck was I supposed to now trust David, her husband, a man I've only known for a little over a year? Well, as the dominoes fall, it was in August 2017 that Ashley wrote that. Also in 2017, Ashley and David announced their separation on social media, and that divorce was finalized in October of last year. Integrity. Where's the family integrity? Where's the religious integrity? Is there anybody who wants to be honest anymore? Does anybody care about these things? Because James says, above all, can we not just be honest? Let's talk about marketplace integrity. Jason Culpa is an entrepreneur. He wrote an article about fellow entrepreneurs. And here's the story he's talking about. In the beginning of his business, which was a marketing business, he had 10 employees. He didn't have a lot of money. And he told them that if they would stick with him, he would make it worth their while. And they did indeed stick with him through lots and lots of hard times. In 2007, he signed an agreement to sell his business to a much larger business, and it was going to be a multi-million dollar sale. It was a really big deal. So there was a little hiccup in the transaction, and the seller couldn't get things together, and the seller apologized and said, "Since we didn't do this precisely as we planned, we're going to give you extra money in the form of stocks, because you've been patient with us." And these stocks were worth a lot of money, millions of dollars of stocks. So here's what Jason says. "Remembering my handshake and promise, I granted these stocks to every full-time employee based on tenure. I had made a commitment to honor their perseverance, and I wasn't about to go back on my word. So 14 employees shared more than $8 million. They earned every penny of it with their trust and hard work. He didn't have to do that. But he said, if you just give me a chance, if you stick with me, I will try to take care of you. And when the time came, those 14 employees had to distribute amongst themselves $8 million. That's integrity. Can we just be people of integrity? Can we just do what we say we're going to do? Zachary Fisher in 1992 wrote an article, and he was saying that he, as a builder, had given a verbal agreement, like not a contract, not in writing. He'd given a verbal agreement that he was going to purchase a certain number of air conditioning units from a particular corporation. And shortly after he shook hands on that deal with no contract, nothing in writing, another company found out that he was looking for an air conditioning unit somehow. And this company came in and said, if you will buy them from us, we'll give you a much better deal. So now Zachary has a decision to make. He spun around in his office and he looked at a picture of his dad, which he had posted because his dad is the one who started his business. He described his dad's life this way. He said, Dad came through Ellis Island, you know, Statue of Liberty. Dad came through Ellis Island as a young bricklayer from Russia in 1904 with little more than the clothes on his back. We were building a six-story apartment house in Queens when a January ice storm followed by a raging blizzard stopped work for weeks. And meanwhile, Dad had to continue paying expenses. Zachary says, when we were walking home from Temple one morning, because they're Jewish, I spoke up. Dad, why don't you do like some of the other contractors and tell the builder he's got to come up with some more money or we walk off the job? And Dad answered, the builder and I shook hands on the deal. And when it comes to choosing between a good name and money, well, and Zachary says, we lost money on that contract and on some others too. But there were always more builders out there wanting us to lay their bricks. They said, you can trust Fisher. His handshake is as binding as the mortar in his work. Integrity. Isn't that great? I mean, where is that even in the Christian community? Are we that? Are we aspiring even to be that? Like, okay, maybe we've had a history. Maybe we haven't done it perfectly. But is that what we intend to be from this day forward? You know, you hope so. Here's the conclusion. Simple integrity, right? We're not asking for miracles. Simple integrity. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. For whatever is more than these comes of evil. Let people say, if he didn't do what he said he was going to do, believe me, there is a very good reason. He would not leave us hanging like this. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. James, let your yes be yes, your no, no, so that you don't fall into condemnation. If you just won't do what you say you're going to do, if you're letting down the people who rely on you, there's going to be condemnation. God is watching. Whether you say, I swear to God, or with God as my witness, or any of that, whether you say it or not, God is watching. And if you're breaking people's hearts, if you look over your shoulder and you see a swath of destruction because people who are counting on you could not rely on you after all, there's going to be trouble in your life. There is going to be a problem with that when you stand before the Lord someday. Simple integrity, religious integrity, family integrity, integrity in the marketplace. Can we not just do that? We don't need oaths because we don't want to hurt anybody. If they're counting on us, we don't want to let them down. And anyway, we're afraid of oaths because James 4:14 teaches us that we might not even be alive tomorrow. So we don't need oaths and we're afraid of oaths. But here's what we do, treasure. And here's what is absolutely a priority in our lives. And that is the person who is relying on us will find us to be reliable. They can count on us. We will not let you down. And that's the integrity that all Christian people should love, prioritize, and treasure. Can we stand and be dismissed with prayer? Just before we close, I'd like to give you a moment of heart examination. And if there's anything about what you've been doing that bothers you in the area of integrity, maybe you can talk to the Lord about that. Maybe there's something you can do to make it right. And I'd like to give you a moment to talk to the Lord about that before I close in prayer. Dear Father, we know that in life there are certain people who rely on us. They're asking us to take care of them and to be individuals they can count on in a world of deception. And I pray that we would be those individuals, that those who are counting on us would find us faithful, find us truthful and reliable. And in our hearts, Lord, we are saying to you that we acknowledge you are always watching every word we say. And we want to please you in what we say and to, as much as possible, increase the good reputation of Jesus and his pleasure in our lives every day. This is our prayer as we depart in Jesus' name. Amen.